Hello and welcome to another episode of Little Fish. This is your bonus Monday episode where we put down our four favorite facts from the last 7 days and we go through your favorite facts that you've submitted to podcast@qi.com. Andy trawls through the email inbox. He picks out the best choice selections and we bring them here. So why don't we get into it? Who wants to start off?
I'll start off. I'm James, by the way, listener.
Nice to meet you.
I have a fact from someone called Thomas. Thomas Martin.
That's a nice name. My name's Andy.
He mentioned you in the intro.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we're off the blocks.
What's Thomas? Thomas Martin writes that the richest person in the world lives in Nottingham.
Oh. Interesting.
Okay. Shoe trillionaire. Nottingham was a big shoe country, wasn't it?
That's Northampton, I think.
Sorry. Nottingham is...
Nottingham has a goose fair.
Has caves?
Oh, yeah. Lots of caves in there.
Cave. Right. I'll say someone who's monetized caves.
Dan, any thoughts?
Well, I'm just thinking Robin Hood's from the area.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, imagine bumping into the richest man on earth on the road. That's a good
you
payday.
You could give it to the poorest man in the world.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. I'm pretty sure Elon Musk is the richest person alive.
So he must be from Nottingham. Is this a clever riddle that Thomas has posed
us? His money is just on paper, really. And in a way, you could say that this person's money is just on paper as well, because this person has got 63 quadrillion pounds, but they can only spend it in one particular coffee shop in Nottingham because someone gave them a gift card and there was a little typo on the gift card and the £10 balance to this place called 200 Degrees Coffee actually came through as 63 quadrillion.
That's really funny. That's really funny. And if you can spend it all in the coffee shop within a month, you get to keep everything.
It's like Brewster's 63 quadrillions. Amazing.
That's so charming. I love it. I love those stories. I love them.
Yeah.
Do you remember the 6th of October 2016?
Of course.
6th of October.
The night of that.
No, I just remember the daytime.
Yeah. Well, probably when you were asleep, because I'm talking midnight, everyone in the UK lost 10% of their worth.
Oh.
Literally everyone.
Is this like a gravity thing? Or
no, what happened was, around that time, Françoise Hollande did a speech about Britain. And a lot of the transactions in the stock markets and in the financial markets are done by computers. And he did this and it triggered off a mini sell-off of sterling.
Right.
And then the computers sort of saw that and then sold more and then sold more. And these programs all started selling loads of sterling. Then there was a second sell-off limit that was hit and then even more started being sold.
Oh my God.
And then it all got fixed before we woke up in the morning. So that's within incredible. 2 minutes of this happening, 8% of the value of sterling was wiped off. And then when the human traders caught up, they sort of fixed it all. So only if you'd gone to a bureau de change at midnight on that day and tried to change your pounds into euros, you could have had a problem. But for everyone else, it didn't make any difference at all.
So funny. That's like a financial version of that film Night at the Museum.
Is it?
Yeah.
What happens in that?
Well, everything goes crazy in the museum every night and Ben Stiller has to fix it all before the morning.
Oh, basically. And then does it get fixed?
I see.
Yeah.
It's like a financial version of The Simpsons, isn't it? Because whatever happens in The Simpsons, by the end of the episode, they're always back to normal. Yes,
exactly. Right. Okay.
Can I just say, I'm staggered that one of us has not seen Night at the Museum, Dan.
What?
I'm staggered you haven't seen Night at the Museum.
No, I just didn't accept your premise that it was similar to this situation. It becomes a museum that is sentient. Everything is sentient all of a sudden.
Yeah, true.
The money didn't become sentient.
But then the markets traded by themselves.
Uh-huh.
So there is a little bit of sentience there.
Okay. Well, that's still kind of more Space Odyssey. You know, it's like it's a sentient AI as opposed to a waxwork of Roosevelt.
This is why our film podcast didn't work, okay? I just want to say that. I'll do a fact.
Yep.
This is a fact about Canada, and it comes in from Martin Williams. Good Canadian name. Mm. This is about Wood Buffalo National Park. Mm. It's the largest park in Canada, right?
Do at night the wooden buffalo become sentient and run amok?
Very funny.
Okay.
It's just about the size of this park.
Okay.
Some parks are big, right?
Yeah, Hyde Park.
Hyde Park, pretty big.
Yeah.
This park is 44,000 square kilometers. It is bigger than Denmark. And if it became an independent nation, it would be the 130th largest country in the world.
Right.
Which very I love. Cool. And Martin has done some more maths, which I respect.
Sorry, point of order.
Yep.
Denmark owns Greenland.
Yeah, Martin.
So actually, Denmark is the largest country in Europe if you don't count Russia.
Really good point. Does it own Greenland, or was it one of those funny things where Greenland owns itself, but it's governed from...
It's the other way around. So Denmark owns it, but Greenland governs itself.
I understand. Okay.
Time of recording, of course.
Time of recording. All right. Well, I'll do the rest of Martin's email anyway, because it's brilliant. Collectively, the 39 national parks and reserves of Canada have an area of 343,000 square kilometres, larger than the Republic of the Congo, and over 40% larger than the entire UK.
This was why my picnic failed in Canada, because I'm like to my mates, I'll see you in the park.
Just middle of the park here, yeah. So that's how big they are. Despite this, not one of them boasts a Waitrose or Wetherspoons location.
Oh.
I am aware of these chain institutions almost exclusively due to your podcast, which mentions them curiously often. This has piqued my own curiosity, and should I ever travel to the UK, I will most assuredly visit a Wetherspoons.
Okay.
It is interesting that you can learn quite a bit from our character probably by the various institutions that we mention on this show.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And Martin says, the one he's already picked the Wetherspoons he'll go to, he says, I'll go to the Mechanical Elephant in Margate in the hope of bumping into Dan. Hopefully it looks better in person than the photos online.
That's a bit unfair. I mean, sure, he hasn't combed his hair today, but... go on, Dan, what are you saying?
I won't be in that one, obviously. I'm in Ramsgate at the far superior Wetherspoons. I don't want to give the impression, by the way, that I go to Wetherspoons.
Nothing wrong with going to Wetherspoons.
I don't want to be the Wetherspoons guy, though.
Not the Wetherspoons guy, you're the wife guy. You can't be both.
All right, let's move on to another one. This one has been sent in by Pete Sorrell Cameron. He says, I don't know if you have covered this before. I don't think it's an outrageous fact, but it's always tickled me that Oscar-nominated actor Michael B. Jordan's father is called Michael A. Jordan.
That's really good. I've never heard that before.
That's really good. I try to look in more to see if there are any other... that were in sequence.
Well, there's Michael Double A Jordan, and then there's Michael Triple A Jordan, who's half the size.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, so his dad, Michael B. Jordan, is not an actor. He works as a supervisor at John F. Kennedy Airport. JFK, of course, son of J.E.K.
No.
Not true. Not true.
You had me.
No, he was J.P.K., his dad. And then weirdly, J.P.K.'s dad was P.J.K., okay. So that's a whole new game.
What
there.
What does the P stand for?
Well, who knows? Patrick, I believe.
Who knows?
But I'm going to say Patrick.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, just quite fun. I love that little bit of sequencing.
Yeah, really good.
The only one that I thought of, which was another confusing version of that, is same first names. So you guys remember Evelyn Waugh had a wife who was also called Evelyn.
Yes.
So the way that the friends distinguished them was he was Hevelin and she was Shevelin.
Okay. Really and nice. They had a child called Evelyn.
Yes.
Yeah, lovely fact.
Really good.
Great fact.
Here's one from Tony Elmquist. And Tony said, around the year 1000, French peasant Lutard of Vertus was commanded by God to preach against certain practices of the church, including tithes, oaths, sacraments, and the veneration of the cross. Eventually, he was branded a heretic and killed himself by throwing himself in a well. The way God chose to communicate with him was via a swarm of bees. A swarm of bees that flew into his anus. Well done if anyone saw where that sentence was going.
I'm starting to see why he threw himself into a well. I think the constant bees flying into your anus would be...
Actually, quite interestingly, the bees flew into his A.
Yes, they did!
So sorry, did you say he was a saint?
He was a peasant.
Okay, you can be both.
You can, absolutely, many of the best ones were both. But no, he was a heretic.
Oh,
the church thought he was a heretic. So I'm sure some people venerate him, because that's the thing with heretics. Like, usually the majority of people don't like you, but there's usually a few.
Like J.D. Vance.
Are we saying he's a saint or a heretic?
Heretic, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe. So at that time of recording, he's beefing with the Pope about matters of Catholic theology. Like, that is honestly bringing a knife to a gunfight.
Really
not that the Pope would approve of either fight, but still. no, so sorry, God communicated with this heretic by flying a swarm of bees up his bottom.
That's according to Tony, yeah.
Amazing. What are the bees communicating?
Bzzz.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like an alarm.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
Yeah.
In your anus.
It could have been worse. They could have communicated with him through his nostril, which we know is the most painful place to be stung by a bee.
Yes.
According to Schmidt.
Yeah.
The Schmidt Pain Index.
Yeah.
Do you know what scaphism is?
Scaphism.
Is it a kind of heresy?
No, but it's something that could happen if you were heretical.
Oh, okay.
It was
punishment?
A method of execution.
Oh, no.
And it was done by the Persians, according to Plutarch. And he described that the person who was to be killed was trapped between two boats, one on top of the other. So like you're inside an Easter egg kind of thing. And your head and your limbs are sticking out, but they're covered in milk and honey. And you're basically eaten by insects. That's your punishment.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Death by insects, basically.
Between two boats?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't fully understand that.
So, like, imagine two, like, rowboats.
Oh, rowboats, yeah.
Like, it's not two ferries.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it's like one rowboat on top of the other, so you have...
Like an egg, yeah.
Like an egg,
oh,
yeah.
I see, yes. Yeah.
But it was basically just a place to hold your body down while you had to stick your bits out, and then the insects would eat your bits.
Crikey.
No fun being a heretic back in the day.
No.
It's you would say this has got to be the heretic's era, really.
Absolutely.
Hasn't it?
There's never been a nicer time.
It'd be quite funny to see an animation of, say, like Richard Dawkins being subjected to all the different ways that heretics were murdered back in the day.
Wow.
Well, just to give us an idea of like what, like, he's living in a good time. He's able to go on stage and say these things.
Yeah.
A different time, he would have had... I didn't know that. Like, we didn't know that as an option of death.
Has he been cancelled, Richard Dawkins?
Not as far as I'm aware. No.
Because that's the modern punishment of a heretic, isn't it?
Food for thought.
Mm. I'll take the cancellation, please, over...
I'll have the bees up the bum.
Thank you.
You get the bees up the bum. You have to go in between two boats while insects eat your arms, and you get a Netflix special.
Here's a great one from Annalisa, with two eyes, who...
How many noses and mouths?
Very strong. In the west coast of Estonia, we used to have about 10,000 Estonia Swedes living.
Uh-huh.
They moved to what is now Estonia about 1,000 years ago.
Wow.
And stayed rather insulated until the Second World War. Isolated, I suppose. But in the olden days, this is just a cool fact... which Anna wants to let us know about a thing called ham fish, as she calls it. In the olden days, it was a tradition that every year after a girl was born, a smoked ham would be put away and stored for her wedding. So a few days the big day, 20 or so well-aged hams would be available, and you'd then boil them to make them edible, and you'd have all your like wedding hams.
It's a really nice idea.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
Hmm.
It's just putting a little bit aside. It's like a bottom drawer, we would call it.
It's like a junior ISA.
Yeah.
A little bit like
it would
that,
have been
yeah.
The equivalent, yeah.
It's slightly more similar to my thing, where you literally put things away for the wedding.
Yes, I do see that. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. I like the analogy.
Yeah. And there'll be government campaigns saying you really should put hams away. You really should salt hams and store them for your daughter's eventual wedding. Nothing, no word about what the son's got. I suppose if there's one wedding, it's, you know, it's at this time.
Yeah, you get half a ham.
You got half a ham. Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah, that is very cool. I've got Andy. I'm sure we've said this before many times, but you pick all these facts for us, don't you? You sort of curate what James and I get.
Yeah.
I just don't know why you pick these particular themes for me sometimes.
I'm really sorry.
Well, there's Rob Walter who sent in saying you can absorb aspirin through your skin, which is why you shouldn't masturbate for too long with liniment. Thank you, Andy.
What's liniment?
Liniment is, Dan knows all about it.
Is it made from the willow tree or something?
I think it must be a medical goo.
Okay.
I think medical so. I think it's a, yeah, it's got, it's heated as well. It's one of those heat lubricants.
Oh dear. Yeah. Or like deep heat?
Yeah.
Oh, crumbs.
I believe so.
Okay, well, we've got a second reason.
I mean, I haven't used it in quite a while. But not after that first time, but I think that was liniment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then this other one sent in by John Turbot. Here's the headline from Scientific American. This may be the oldest butthole imprint on Earth.
Yeah.
I'm just getting a lot of butthole and masturbation stuff from you in my
James
DMs.
Had the bees up his bottom.
That's fair enough.
What I would say is, if I see a fact that's really good, but I don't want to read it out myself, I think I know a patsy.
Can you tell us about the oldest bun?
Yeah, this is actually very interesting.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So they discovered an animal squatting in the mud, and it was preserved, and it's the first time that they've seen this. Now, it's a cloaca, right? So it's the exit point of multiple different things.
So they didn't find the animal. It's the oldest fossilized imprint of a bottom.
Yeah, exactly. And it's around 299 million years ago that there was a volcanic eruption, and this was buried in a patch of mud in what is today central Germany. So it's fossilized, a fossilized butthole imprint, as Scientific American puts it. Yeah, it's I do love that idea that we've got a more organized filing system for what we let out of our bodies. That's
what do you mean? Like, as in birds, they everything goes in and out of one hole, but we have a few different options.
Exactly. We have a few different holes in which we allow the urine out or the poo out.
Thank you, Professor.
Yeah. I'm still reading the Scientific American article here.
Well, it feels like progress is what you're saying.
I feel like I'm more organized than you guys say I am, just by the nature of that.
And I assume from how you are in your day-to-day working life that you were still rocking the cloaca. I just sort of thought, Dan won't have got around to sorting this out yet.
What a sort of like really posh schoolboy bird that would be at school.
I actually think you haven't even reached cloaca status. You're like a shipworm that only has one opening. So everything goes in and out, including the food goes in and the poo comes out. And the wee goes out and the breathing happens all in one hole.
Well, it's good to work out what you think of me.
Bet you wish you'd been a bit nicer about my night at the museum analogy now.
Now that I think about it, it's a really cool analogy.
Yeah.
Here's
one from CC Lamb. This is about a really interesting sounding place in southern Utah, USA. My husband and I were visiting St. George, Utah. And I drove a rental car from Las Vegas up to meet him. And as I drove, I could see the gorgeous Virgin River, as it's called, as I crossed it on my way to Zion Country. I learned shortly afterwards that the Virgin River I crossed, that's its name, was named after a Mr. Virgin, who was an early settler of the region. It's named after Thomas Virgin, 19th century settler.
Mm, that's very good. And that was one where you tried to trick us.
Yeah, how'd it go?
You tried to slip it in.
Yeah.
Anyone did to Mr. Virgin.
Brilliant. Superb. While in St. George, we went to visit a fascinating dormant volcano in Snow Canyon State Park, named, of course, after Lorenzo and Erastus Snow.
No.
Who were the early Mormon pioneers in the area.
Oh, that's very good.
Snow Canyon.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's fantastic.
That's very good.
Lovely. Lovely double tap there.
Lovely double tap. Well, hey, listen, thank you, everyone, for sending in your facts. Please do keep them coming in, podcast@qi.com. We love going through these and reading them out here. But before we wrap up the episode, one more thing to do, which is if you are part of the highest tier of Club Fish, which is our private members club on Patreon, it's called Friend of the Podcast, that tier, you will be eligible to become custodian of one of the facts from the 12-year history of fish. And so we've been going through the big long list, dishing them out, and we've got 8 new custodians to give away today. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. This one goes out to Stuart Earl. And Stuart, your fact is that the Statue of Liberty originally wore a headscarf.
I think this was one of my facts. And I remember because I was looking at the Statue of Liberty's face before it was erected on top of the body, and I thought it looked exactly like Elvis Presley, so I started digging into it.
How interesting. Was it based on the mother of Bertholdi or something?
Yes. I think it was
based
on... How
interesting that she looked like Elvis Presley.
Yeah, so that's interesting in its own right, isn't it? Anyway, yeah. I started looking into it, and then there was this whole thing about Egyptology at the time. Someone had written a book about the sort of obsession with Egypt at the time, and it was just a fact within that.
Interesting fact, Elvis Presley wore size 479 blue suede shoes.
Brilliant fact.
We've really got good. To explain that's the shoe size, the sandal size of
the Statue of Liberty. Statue of Liberty. And I'm also, I think I might have got the number wrong, but anyway.
I think it was 800 and something.
Was it?
I think it was 879. I think you got that. I think that was that. Anyway, shall I do one?
Yeah.
This one goes out to A Llama. A polo mint takes 42 and a half minutes to dissolve if you stick it up your nose.
Very good.
We did this at a live show.
Yeah, we did it.
When I say we did this at a live show, Dan, you, I believe, did it at a live show. You stuck a polo up your nose.
Yes, because we record over an hour, so I thought, okay, this is interesting. It might be gone by the time
did
we
it
finished.
Not sting like liniment on the penis. Yes.
Or a flock of bees up the bottom. Sorry.
A flock?
Herd? Swarm.
Sorry.
I was like, herding bees, as the old saying goes. What happened? I can't remember. It didn't seem to work.
It didn't work. No.
It came from a study because you need to know if things get stuck up children's noses, how long they have been up there.
Yeah.
They use polos because it's like, you know, boiled sugar, basically.
Right. So it will dissolve eventually.
Yeah.
Maybe the pH in your nose is unusual in some way.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
You've got an unusually mild nose.
Well, right into scientists. Mm. Let's do another one. This is for Georgie the First. Georgie, your fact is now when you have a tattoo lasered off, you end up pooping it out.
Beautiful.
Do you think
fact.
It's Georgie L?
Yeah, probably. Okay. But I quite like Georgie the First as a...
Congratulations, Your Majesty.
This was one of yours, Andy. These are quite a few sort of famous facts.
Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
It's good to know where all my tattoos have gone since I had the procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
that the ink goes into your poo. It's not that the poo has a picture of, you know, Greg Wallace on it or whatever. Whatever you might have tattooed on your body.
I showed you that in confidence terms. And it was a different type.
What was on the other bum cheek? I can't remember.
It was it was Hugh Edwards, but the point...
Oh, I bet you regretted getting Scott Mills on your penis.
I was thrilled by that fact. It's a very funny fact.
Yeah, very good. Very nice indeed. Okay, here is a fact that is now under the custodianship of Martin Nurtebohm. And apologies, Martin, if I've mispronounced your name. But your fact is that the man who invented the airship, Alberto Santos Dumont, had dinner parties with 10-foot-high chairs so his guests could experience the joy of flight.
Yes.
Fantastic. That was another all-time... Santos Dumont was such an amazing character.
Yeah.
Yes.
He is brilliant.
I went recently to the Science Museum, and they've got the one of the top floors is the flight thing, and his name is all over it. They've got loads
is
of his
really?
Early designs and things, and yeah, it's really cool.
Original items? Or?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Is he the one... Or it was definitely in that era in Paris where they were like the only person who had a dirigible, like a balloon. Hmm. And they used to float from house to house and just sort of sit outside your window going, hi, it's me.
It yes. sounds really familiar.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. He did that. It's lovely.
I remember years ago at the QI building, we organized a book event with Philippe Petit. He's the man who did the tightrope walk between the Twin Towers. And so I was there helping him set up and so on. And he sort of went, do you have a ladder? And we're like, you want a ladder? And he likes to start all of his talks while perching at the top of a ladder to give you the sense of him maybe falling off.
Wonderful.
Just before the beginning of his talk.
Wonderful.
I don't know if he does it for all, but certainly that day I had to go find a ladder.
What a guy.
Anyway, let's get another fact.
Here's another one. This one goes out to Rachel Robertson. Rachel, your fact is... A new scientific study has concluded that there are too many scientific studies. Vintage Dan phrasing there.
Yes.
And this would have been about 2017. And I guess they
stopped, didn't they? They stopped.
Quite
they
right.
They said, we've had enough of scientists. We've had enough of experts.
Yeah. Sort of time-wasting science studies, I suppose, is what they were concerned about.
Yes. Yeah.
But is any study really a waste of time?
No, you never know where the new breakthrough is going to come from. It might be something about, you know, how long does it take a tortoise to go around the lake or something, but you don't know. Like, that could be the next Meta sunglasses.
Exactly.
Comes from that study.
To pick one brilliant invention.
Let's do another fact. This is going out to Kathleen Frederick. Speaking of tortoise studies, you should never pick up a desert tortoise in case it pees itself to death.
Oh,
yep.
Good advice.
I learned that when I went to Death Valley in America, because that's the rule. And it says it might even say it on signs or something, like, don't pick them up.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Are they around the place? Did you see one there?
I don't think I saw one, though. I think they like to hide away.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're pretty secretive. Death Valley, of course, named after Sir Reginald Death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Frankie Valley.
Frankie Valley. Oh, brilliant. Nice. I'll do one more. This is a James fact, and it goes out to Renata Strausser, and it's that firefighters use wetter water than we do.
Yeah, I love that fact.
Yeah, that's so a great one.
It's a really good one, because they put little little chains of something.
Polymers,
that's the word I was stretching for. And it just makes it more slippy, but it means that it goes through the pipes quicker, which means that when you fire it out, it goes quicker to the fire.
It's stunning.
That's fantastic.
When you find that, it's one of those facts, when you find it out, you have to know more.
Yeah.
It's great. I think we said at the time, they keep slipping over on the extra wet water afterwards, which is quite funny.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so good. We do have one more fact to dish out.
Okay, I'll do the last one for the day. And that is, this is a very interesting one. So, Katie Baker Smith, your fact is that plants have their own internet made of fungus. And I think what's interesting about this is that we did this fact quite soon after this was discovered. There was a few books that came out around the same time that talked about this mycelium network between trees. But I think in recent years, there's a suggestion that it's been overblown a little bit.
Really?
And the interesting thing is, because it's such a good idea, and intuitively it sounds like, this must happen, right? And it tells you a lot about forests and whatever. It gets taught everywhere now. And if you go to lots of museums, they'll have full areas that tell you about mycelium network and stuff like that. But actually, my understanding is it probably does happen to a certain extent that fungi help the trees.
Yeah.
But the idea that they all kind of talk to each other and stuff might be a little bit overblown.
Okay. Right.
So they still might have basic communication, but not to the point of... Because they're saying stuff like they do, and we said, online shopping to the point where they can distinguish between their relatives and they can make sure they're stealing from other competing plants and all that stuff.
Online shopping, I guess they'd be using Amazon, which is, of course, a place where there are lots of trees.
Yes. Named after Michael Amazon.
Or Tree Bay.
Really good.
It was sitting there.
Yeah. I might have actually said that on the day, I think.
I think that's fine. I think, yeah.
But I'm not sure. I know I have quite a few tabs open for a debunk of this. With
really?
The idea of going into it on QI in the next couple of years.
Oh, wow. That will be fascinating, because that's a good example of where we can learn how sometimes we overblow and pull back. Like, how did we overblow it? Because it's data that was showing what was happening. That's great. I'm excited for that.
Walnut Mart, I suppose, because walnut's a kind of tree, and Walmart has a very big online shopping presence.
I could hear the keyboard tapping in the background. Were you asking for just a big ChatGPT?
Yeah, and I'm going to be writing a pretty stiff complaint to ChatGPT.
You don't mean ChatGPT-3.
Oh, get stopped.
Okay, congratulations to Katie, Renata, Kathleen, Rachel, Martin, Your Royal Highness, Georgie the First, or Georgie L, Alama, and Stuart. You are now the custodians of those 8 facts, as well as getting that. You will have already received a digital certificate, Andy, you've got a joke. You're looking furious.
It's got to be better than ChatGPT.
It's not. Okay. All right.
Anyway, Moving on, you will have received, as I say, a digital certificate. So if anyone wants one of those, they're very cool. You just need to go to patreon.com/clubfish because Clubfish, as we've said, is our private members club. So head there and do please, as I said, keep submitting facts for this show. We love it. So podcast@qi.com, they all go to Andy. Otherwise, we'll just see you again on Friday with a big fish. So we'll catch you all then. But for now, from me, goodbye, James.
I also say goodbye.
Okay, and we'll see you next week. Sorry, Andy.
I guess it's tree commerce.
Okay, like e-commerce. Goodbye.